Today's Stripe Show podcast is brought to you by About Golf Simulators. And we're back, Stripe Show podcast, on a Tuesday. Fun one here today. There's no PGA Tour event this week. They're off this week. Few more to go for the regular rest of the fall season, I should say. And then take a few weeks off around the holidays, and then they fire it back up in Hawaii for the 2024 season. And two guys that you're going to be seeing a decent amount in their rookie season on the PGA Tour next year, it's the Cooty brothers, Parker and Pearson, joining me today together. I thank both of you for your time, and congratulations on earning your PGA Tour card.
Thanks for having us. Nah, looking forward to it. Should be fun. We'll see.
Yeah, it's been a fun year.
Should be fun as far as the season, or should be fun with the podcast here. Maybe a little spearing with your brother. You guys are in two different locations right now. You guys aren't practicing, getting ready for 2024. What's up?
It's a little rainy. Yeah, raining, windy in Dallas right now, and so it's a good day for me to get wedding venue shopping, knock off some things on the list. And yeah, I think Parker's just kind of relaxing.
What'd you say? Wedding shopping?
Wedding venue shopping. It's quite the process, but.
Oh, well, if you need any thoughts or advice or counsel on that, let me know. We can talk. We can talk off air about the whole wedding thing and, you know, what to expect from there on. Parker, you got any of that in the near future?
Most likely, yeah. I have a pretty long-time girlfriend at this point. And
okay.
My girlfriend and his fiance have become pretty good friends, so.
Okay.
Yeah, it'll be soon. As my girlfriend and I's dog is just staring right at me right now, so.
Okay.
We'll be there.
So they get it, right? Like they already know what they're signing up for, right? Because like they know the quality of golfers that you both are. They know that you're going to be a professional golfer for a long time. They know that this game is absurdly difficult and the ups and downs of the game. So they know all this, right? They know how it can kind of turn us all a little bit crazy and cuckoo from time to time, right? And they're cool with that.
Yeah, I mean,
Yeah, I go for it.
When we first started dating, they had no idea. I mean, my girlfriend couldn't tell you anything about golf, and I know Pearson's laughed at him for thinking he could make money playing professional golf. So when we first started going, they both had no idea, but we're both pretty close to 3.5 years mm-hmm. into our relationships, and they have a pretty good understanding of kind of how just things go right now and how much time we actually do miss and all of those little things. So, but I mean, they're both great and they both luckily do understand it and are letting us do this now.
Yeah. You same thing.
She understands all that.
Same thing. She kind of walked into this, not knowing anything other than, oh, he plays golf at Texas. And, really funny stories. I think about maybe after a few months of dating, something like that, she had called her dad and was like, he's going to like play professional golf. Like, is that even a thing? And he was just was like, yeah, like, you know, some guys do it. Like it can work. And she just kind of continued to go with it. And, yeah, 3.5 years later, she's doing really well with it. She said yes to do it for the rest of her life. So we're in a good spot.
Well, those three Korn Ferry Tour wins, you know, that goes a long ways, right? That kind of helps out the cause a little bit. And it's funny, like, you know, I've got to know quite a few professional golfers over the years, and some of their significant others and this and that. And it's a ride, you know. I mean, you guys are the 0.001% that, you know, actually get to play professional golf and get to play now on the PGA Tour. So, hey, when you find the right one, that's the most important thing. You put the ring on it and off you go, and you live the ups and downs together. I want to get into a lot of things today with you guys, and we have to start with the Texas Rangers, right? I mean, that's, don't we have to start there? Like, I mean, are you guys Rangers fans? Please don't tell me you're Astros fans, please.
Love the Rangers. That was awesome. That was awesome.
That was awesome.
Gosh. No too many Astros fans, and we've been taking it for a long time from them. So, and that last night was, we were with our buddies, and it was a blast.
Yeah. So I'm from Northwest. I'm a Seattle diehard, and to see the Rangers pass us now in the last couple of years, and now leapfrog the Astros and get to the World Series, is tough to swallow. But we certainly, along with the entire Major League Baseball, you know, all the fans across the country, everybody was happy to see Texas beat Houston. I promise you that. So congratulations. They'll be in the World Series. Game 7 tonight. Phillies and Diamondbacks, they'll take on the winner of that. Now, your family, okay, growing up in Plano, Texas, your dad, for so my audience understand, Kyle was a good player. I mean, he played the Asian Tour. He played the Corn Ferry Tour back in the 90s. I mean, he was a legitimate, you know, called mini tour player, right? Didn't play the PGA Tour, but he played a lot of professional golf and made, you know, a lot of checks doing that. Your grandfather, Charles, was a three-time winner on the PGA Tour, won the 1971 Masters. So playing great golf is part of the Cootie family through and through. So anytime I think about that, I just, okay, your grandfather, great player, your dad, great player. Now both of you, great players. You go back to your youth, coming up, you guys are young phenoms playing. I'm sure your dad is there, has something to say about your swing. Your dad or your grandpa probably looking at your game, and he's got an opinion and something about the swing. Was it all just smooth sailing, or was there, like, you know, I think grandpa and dad are maybe kind of at odds on what I should be doing, halfway back or maybe coming down? Parker, I'll start with you. Was there some fun conversations there?
There were a few. I mean, look, luckily when we were younger, our dad just kind of like let us get into the game, if that makes sense, naturally. I mean, we just wanted to do what dad did and go to the range. And then down the road when we were 13, 14, got fairly decent. And that's kind of when the odds, if there's a couple times where, I mean, my funny thing is my granddad, first time he saw a swing on video, he didn't believe that was a swing. They thought they were pulling a prank on him. So old school, obviously, like, you're just feeling what you think you're doing. And sometimes, as we know, as golfers, that's just not the case. Mm-hmm. And so when that happened, or I say when that happened, just like, my dad knows the swing pretty well and watched Pure Science lessons for 10 plus years now. And so just, there's sometimes a little miscommunication, I would say, is the best way to describe it, between my dad and granddad. But I mean, they're both our biggest supporters, and I truly wouldn't change any of it. I mean, just, I think it's obviously all in good nature, and how can Pearson and I be the best we can? Yeah. But it's been a great balance, I think, to have my granddad's view and my dad's view of someone who made it and was successful in his career. And I mean, my dad would be the first to tell you that he quote unquote failed at his profession. I mean, he'll tell you that. And he just tries to look at it as us not making the same mistakes as he did. But it's been great.
So would you say Pearson granddad is kind of that old school of, obviously they didn't have video, they didn't have 3D, they didn't have track, they didn't have all these things, right? They didn't have these beautiful about golf simulators and all that. And so it was more like you had to dig it out of the dirt, right? Now, there was a few guys that kind of figured it out. I think you look at like Ben Hogan, some of the more, you know, deep thinkers would work on it, and you know, they kind of figured a lot of stuff out, right, without being able to measure it. But granddad was more dig it out of the dirt, you feel it. That's the difference, where your dad brought maybe more of that modern, where it's like, hey, let's take a look at it on video. Let's, you work with Chris Como, let's get an idea of what the ball's doing from a data standpoint, or maybe what your body's doing and how we can find some more efficiency going about it, maybe in more of the technological side of it.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, our granddad was very, like, just feel-oriented. You know, if you want to hit a cut, think cut. If you want to hit a draw, think draw. If you want to hit it low, feel like you're hit under a bench. Hit it high, hit it over the bench. So, like, those were kind of just his go-to like thoughts, feels, and nothing related to like, you know, club face, swing path, attack mm-hmm. angle. None of that mattered. It's just think it, do it. And then, but there's also like, you know, like a lot of guys that are natural faders of the golf ball. They'll line up right and hit a little pull draw if they want to draw it to close the face down or vice versa. All so now guys kind of just, and that's where I feel like our dad might have like leaned us towards of like, okay, you don't have to manipulate things as much as you might think. You know, you can kind of just tweak things based on setup and make the ball do other things. So that blend of just like, okay, mm-hmm. you have a guy that would control his ball flight completely by thought process and hands and feel and everything like that. To our dad, it's like, okay, well, how can we, and Chris, how can we kind of do these things in a simpler way? Just because you have technology, you have TrackMan to see all that stuff. But yeah, truly the crazy part about it is our granddad's swing is very aesthetically great, and it's very it's very modern, and he thinks he wanted to have a high hands and everything through the ball, and he's one of the guys that's very low and around the corner kind of feel and a tight draw. And Spencer Levine, it's hilarious. So he's out on the Corn Ferry this year, won this year on the Corn Ferry, and his dad played on the PGA Tour and watched our granddad play. And when Spencer was growing up, his dad would make Spencer go to the range whenever my granddad was warming up to make him watch him hit balls. So Spencer Levine told Parker and I that he's mimicked his entire swing the last 20 years based on our granddad's swing of growing up watching him hit balls. And so, again, our granddad just had a very good aesthetic swing, but like in his mind, he thought he did everything with feel and high hands or low hands to hit the golf shot. But reality, that wasn't the case. But he could have no idea with no camera or anything like that. Mm-hmm. No. So we've grown up in an incredibly fortunate world of our granddad with his thoughts and then our dad and good people around us coaching wise to kind of help us influence, I guess, both sides of technical and feel.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? It is a balance. I was just exchanging text with a really top teacher who's very big in the 3D world, launch monitor, as I am. You know, I like it too, and I take it in. You have to learn from it and obviously stay abreast with it. But it's always interesting. There was a picture of Tiger Woods and Butch Harmon, and I made mention that I said, you think about it, Tiger, let's say, is the greatest player of all time, right? And if he's not, it's Jack Nicklaus. Well, both those guys didn't use 3D and really launch monitors a whole lot for at least most of Tiger's career. Now he does some, I think, at this point. And Butch Harmon is the greatest coach of all time, and he doesn't use it either, right? So it's, you know, like, you don't discount the value of all this information that's available and to use it. But at the end of the day, you know, hitting the shots, obviously, and the feel and the self-discovery and the ownership becomes the most important part of it. And it is a blend. Sometimes you might feel you need a little more tech. Sometimes you might need to feel like you just need to be an athlete and play. And it's just this never-ending cycle. Yeah. It feels like it from time to time. So it's always an interesting conversation. Parker, you mentioned your dad alluded to some of the mistakes that he made as a professional. I mean, can you elaborate on that? Was there one or two things that really stuck with you that, hey, this is where I, in hindsight, maybe failed?
I mean, there's not a ton. I don't think the one that, I mean, would stick out though is just on the mental side of the game. I mean, mm-hmm. I think at times he said he played a little too tentatively or stuff like that. And when I was younger, that was actually, it's something that I kind of struggled with. Like if I got in the lead or I got around it, I was like, okay, like let's just not make a mistake. Like let's finish here. Or if I can make a birdie, we maybe win, like little things like that. And I mean, that's one of the things that we talked about, especially in high school golf, kind of just when that age of where it's time to start going and getting it. Like, I mean, really getting it, not just coasting in, coming down the stretch or, I mean, because at the end of the day, I mean, top finishes on tour rewarded, so points, all that stuff. I mean, mm-hmm. But it's also part of the game to win. Like, I mean, everyone wants to win, and it only happens so often. When you do get in that position, I mean, you're not going to remember the third place you had 3 years ago, but if you win that tournament, I think you'll have a little different feeling about that. So mm-hmm. it's just little things like, but that's probably the biggest one that sticks out. It's just the mental side of the game and not being afraid to go get in.
So I got to ask you this. There's a short game debate going on right now. And I don't know if it's a debate or if it's just people are top teachers are bored or what the deal is right now. But, you know, there's this discussion that in a stock green side pitch, right? Let's say you're off a good lie, tight lie, and, you know, it's 15 to 25 yards and you want to get one in there low to medium with the little sauce on it. And, you know, on one camp you have, and Joe Mayo is a friend of mine and someone that I really enjoy talking to. And he's really pushed down on the pedal of, we need to get steeper on it and use the leading edge more. And that's really what Victor Hovland has learned to do. Like he's moved the low point way up. He's gotten steeper and he's got the leading edge a little more exposed. Although Victor, as you guys are very clever in the way you can get the club head out of the ground, right? So you can get steep, yet get the club head out where the leading edge maybe is minimal. And then you got the other side, which I think is more modern. And you look at like this shallower approach, right? Where it's the shaft leans not as much, you're not leaning forward as much, and the club's coming in and you're using the bounce a little bit more, no sense. And so like friction on the face and spin, there's all these kinds of these little variables that it's hard to really wrap your mind around in short game shots that happen. So anyway, I think about it with you guys because you're in Texas. And there you got Jordan Spieth. There you got Scottie Scheffler. And those dudes get left and get steep, get the leading edge in, and they're two of the most magical short game players in the game. And then you look on the other side, Max Homany, all that. So stock green side pitch. I'm going to open it up to you first, Pearson. You getting that leading edge in the ground a little more like some of your Texas boys, or are you a bit shallower?
I am. Our short game coach, Josh Gregory, he would agree wholeheartedly. I get the leading edge in there too much. Just growing up with grain, growing up with hard pan, or even just kind of some sandy lies just because there's not consistent grass all the time. Your body just reacts. You go, all right, I know I'm going to get ball first. I'm going to get a ton of spin. I can figure out how to like land it in a proper place to hit a good shot. If I try and do something with different, like I really don't know how I'm going to perform. So it's kind of, yeah, unfortunately I wish I was more consistent with the soft kind of draw, the little softer ball flight. And it's something I'm definitely working on, but if I'm in a position and I have just a very stock pen that's six paces on and I'm, you know, three or four off the green, unfortunately it's pretty middle of the stance and it's a little more into the ground than I would like. And
yeah,
trying to balance it, but it's just kind of, yeah, the go-to shot's just a little more into the ground.
How about you, Parker?
Yeah, I guess when Pearson puts it that way, when I'm thinking about if I had pens three or four on and I'm just off the green and I'm right in between. I mean, Josh Gregory teaches like wide to wide and real shallow, but gosh, now thinking if I'm into the grain, if I'm definitely into the grain, I'm taking some dirt. I mean,
I
think it's too hard to really pick it, especially if it gets really tight and into the grain. I mean, unless you get a perfect lie, it's really hard to consistently perfectly brush it, but I love the way it feels. Like I would love to be able to do that more often.
Yeah.
But I guess in hindsight, it's just what we've grown up on, I think, is more the product of that.
You know, Gregory's going to watch this, right? Like he's going to be like, what the?
Yeah. Unfortunately, we're going to be on hard pan hitting open face. Something's like, you're going to get it right.
He did text me. He did text me some questions. So, and one of them was, what do you guys think when you watch him hit greenside pitch shots? He claims he's pretty damn good at that shot.
It truly is unbelievable how good he is himself around the greens. Like there's a lot of coaches that will be like, I want you to feel this, and they'll set up to the ball and they'll show you what they want the club to do or they want the face to do. But Josh will just like take any one of his players' wedge. He'll take it. He'll put a ball down and be like, all right, do this. And the ball is absolutely like, he'll rip the cover off the ball on a 10-yard shot. And you're just like, dude, and he's taking it like shoulder high for a 10-yard shot and just dumping it with like no turf interaction. And you're like, that's the dream. Like if I can do that, I would too. And so, I know he's trying to get us a little dig there, but he truly is like, it's hard to say what Josh teaches also, because you learn so much literally just watching him do kind of what he does. Like I have so many, the funniest part is being on the Corn Ferry in college or whatever. Like I would text him like, hey, like I just do better when I see it. Like send me a player, like some of the players like Taylor Moore, great standard chipping action, something like that. And I'll be like, hey, show me what Taylor's doing, or show me what Patrick Reed's doing. And instead of doing that, he'll prop up a video of himself and send that. And it's just, but he's like, he's a great coach and he's taught us well. But yeah, he's disgusting with the wedge.
You agree with all that, Parker?
Yeah, unfortunately. I couldn't say any better.
He's trying to dig us, but it's one of those things I got to give credit where it's due.
He's going to be rewinding this and playing it for us next time we see him.
HackMotion is an innovative wrist analysis sensor and app that measures players' wrist and hand movement in the golf swing. With audio feedback and different drill modes, it offers the capability to improve players' wrist mechanics in the golf swing to provide a better club face control and impact position. HackMotion can be used for both full swing and putting to cover all golf shots. HackMotion is used by some of the top golf coaches today around the world. Visit HackMotion.com. All right, so let's go. I got some other questions here. Go a little fast, rapid fire here on some of these answers. Pearson, you said you work with Chris Como. He kind of alluded to something around like beer versus bone broth. Like, what's that all about?
Well, Chris is a health savant. The guy doesn't even know what a foreign substance is in his body. So, ever since we went to college, we worked with Chris from the time we were about 11 to about 20, 21. And then for about 2 years, we both worked with Troy Den. In the last 6 months, I've been with Chris again. But the point is that ever since we went to college, when we were about 18 or so, we'd come back to see him and stuff. And he was always ask us, how's the bone broth? How's instead of partying or having a good time in college, like, oh, how's the bone broth, boys? Are y'all staying healthy and stuff like that? Because he swears it's incredible for you.
Bone broth. That's what he says, right?
Oh, yeah. He'll just drink bone broth out of a carton.
Jesus. Does that guy think about anything other than golf? Although I mean, saw him snowboarding. He texted me. I saw a picture of him snowboarding.
Well, no, but that's tied to golf because he's teaching Sean White for his golf pass stuff. So everything he does is tied to golf, but he gets to do some really cool things outside of it.
Yeah. So, Parker, who's longer off the tee, you or Pearson?
I would say I am.
Don't lie to him.
Don't lie. Yeah, exactly. Pearson told our agent not too long ago I was longer off the tee, so.
And he went through a spurt.
I'll right now definitely.
So it's back. It's like back and forth. It's not.
It does. Yeah.
It's close.
Yes, I mean, because this summer I was really hitting it far, and then I've slowed down a little bit, and then Pearson's picked up his speed. I mean, it's just those 2 or 3 miles an hour that just literally switch around.
Say like one's longer than the other, but it's literally like 3 to 5 yards of carry max. When you play every practice round together and you see the ball speed and everything like that every time, it's like, oh, I got you there. Or no, I got you here. So it's who's longer is a really debate of 5 yards between us.
So it's like when Pearson, you catch one, you know it's probably like 8 or 9 past him and you're kind of walking past. Do you have a go-to? It's like, hey, what's up? Like, why don't you go ahead and go first on this hole?
Yeah, I'll ask him if he likes Walmarts, because I can build one between our balls. Just got a few good ones.
Were you guys competitive with each other growing up, or was it always just like more like friendship? Hey, let's go play golf and have fun.
I think it's been both. I mean, it is both. I mean, luckily we do have a good relationship, at least I think. Who knows? He could say something different right now. But it has been very competitive for our entire lives. I mean, from all sports and just every little thing we could do, we've been competing. And I think it has made us better. It's, I mean, I wouldn't change anything about it, but definitely a lot of competition going on literally anything you can think about.
Let me ask you this, Pearson, PGA Tour next year. Give me one or two, maybe three guys you're most excited to play with. Like you, I want to play with that guy. I want to see what's up with how his game is and stack it up.
Shoot. I love Scotty. Like, obviously,
you've played with Scotty, right? You've played with him.
Yeah, I mean, we've kind of like hit balls and stuff, but truthfully, like, have not just the 4-year age gap, like, kind of just been on different, wavelengths. He was ahead of us in junior golf. And when we got to college, he was Corn Ferry and starting his career. So it's a timeline of it's been a little off, but I mean, yeah, like, Scotty and Roy are kind of, you know, the two guys I've always grown up loving Roy, just the way he plays and kind of just his golf game. So, Rory and then Scotty kind of in a tournament situation would be really cool because that probably means I'm somewhere near the lead if I'm playing with him.
What about you, Parker? Is there any guys when you think back when you were younger and growing up that, oh, wow, I'm going to play with them next year? Anybody come to mind?
I mean, the ones Pearson just said, obviously, too. And then I would love to play with Tommy Fleetwood. I mean, I love his swing. And everyone talks about his ball striking. I mean, I would just like to see it in person or see it under the gun. I mean, you can walk him down that range on any Korn Ferry PGA Tour event, and it looks pretty nice. Yeah. But under the gun is when it really obviously sticks out. I would love to see that.
You know, it's interesting with Fleetwood. Like, he's always been a great ball striker. I think his short game has improved the last few years. He had a great season. He just can't quite get it done on Sunday, right? In getting he hasn't won yet, of course, on the PGA Tour. So he's right there. And the guy's just the gem of a dude and be fun to play with. Have you guys played with Spieth, either one of you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. We've both been out with Spieth, which is.
Is it the same like in a casual round where he's just constantly, oh my God, talking to DC, you know, talking to the ball in the air? Michael, what's up? You know, he's just constantly like rambling and this and that. Is the same in a practice round as it is we see in a PGA Tour round?
Yes, with a lot more trash talk. It's exactly the same. And you get the exact same chip in from the garbage can off the green. Like, yeah, no, it's all the same stuff. I mean, which is good because you get to see, like, hey, this is kind of what I need to do to be at that level. But it's also annoying when you're playing him in game. So it's all fun. It's all fun, though, and great to play with him.
It's absurd how many times he chips in.
Chips in, and if he's chipping off the green, like, it scares the hole. It doesn't matter if he's chipping from the fescue or short-sided downslope bunker. Like, it's gonna look good and it's gonna be right. Mm-hmm. And he's not gonna think anything of it, and everyone's just standing there like, what the hell did I just watch? And then you move on the next hole and he does it again. So
Doug Gim played at Texas, right? So many great Texas players over the year. Brandel Chambly played at Texas. I know I saw a tweet from Brandel. I think it was yesterday or 2 days ago. Anyway, it was within the last 36 hours. And it was a nice long text about basically his appreciation to his fellow Texas players and how they passed up a lot of money to go to live. Probably the most amount, I'm going to go ahead and assume, was Jordan Spieth and Scottie Scheffler. But there were others. I had Ludvig Åberg on the podcast right before he turned professional. And he just got back from a college event. And I could see him. He was the number one player, amateur in the world, and had a really good conversation with him in his dorm room. And I asked him, I said, hey, did Liv contact you? And he says, yeah. And he says, yeah, they offered me a lot of money. And I said, no. And I was like, wow, you know, that's you know, that's pretty amazing, really, to be a young guy like that, because his goal was to play the PGA Tour, big goal to maybe be a part of the Ryder Cup and all that. So we went into that. Liv, you guys were in that text that Brandel talked about, and he was very complimentary to both of you. It sounds like Liv approached you guys and wanted you to be a part of their circuit. Is that the case?
Yeah, it was. It was very similar to Ludwig's situation. It was my kind of winter of my senior year of college, I guess early spring. They approached my agent at a tournament and said, "Here it is. Here's a contract." And let us know. And he called me. He's like, "Hey, you know, I'm like obligated to tell you, like, here it is. Like, what do you think?" And as an amateur, I was number one in PGA Tour U. I was going to get automatic corn fade, because when I finished number one, you didn't get a PGA Tour card. So I wasn't quite in Ludwig's position, because I wasn't going to go straight to the PGA Tour. I was going to go to the corn fade, and I was going to have to bounce my way out of the corn fade to the PGA Tour. And so Liv was almost more appealing, because I didn't have any guaranteed money like that. So and the deal also like has incentives for Parker to play as well. And it was just kind of, it was appealing, but after you kind of let it digest for about 3 or 4 hours, you're like, well, I certainly don't play golf just for money. And I certainly never envisioned myself playing in, you know, kind of overseas. I've always wanted to play the PGA Tour. I'm biased. I'm an American. I grew up in Texas. I want to play the 4 or 5 PGA Tour events in Texas. That's been the vision of my whole life. Of when I'm 24, 25 years old, I plan to play and on the PGA Tour for the next 20 years. That's just always been the goal. And so once that kind of clarity of the money kind of went away, the decision was very easy. And I just called him back. I was like, "Hey, we're not doing this. Like, we're going to get to the PGA Tour."
Is that a conversation you have like with your dad and maybe even grandpa too? Was he brought in and say, "Hey, Liv's approached me," or is that something that you guys like, "This is my decision and here it is"?
It definitely was kind of just my decision. Like, my dad obviously called me and was, had his couple minutes of what he thought, but at the end of the day, he told me, he's like, "Hey, this is real money. Like, this isn't a joke, and you got to make a decision for yourself, because if anyone makes the decision for you, you're gonna regret it." And again, like, after about an hour or two, it became very clear that I did not want to be a part of that. I want to be a part of the PGA Tour, and I'm gonna do everything I can to do that. And if it didn't work out, I could accept that. I couldn't accept going to Live and not ever fulfilling my dream of being on the PGA Tour.
There's just so much uncertainty, right? Like, we were, before we came on air, and we kind of moved past Live now for a second, because frankly, I'm just tired of talking about it, but I had to ask. Okay. But Live obviously is part of this next conversation, which is that the PGA Tour, there's just so much uncertainty that what's going to happen between those two entities, but also even your guys' playing schedule, right? We're going into November 1st into next season, Parker, and how many starts you guys would potentially get. What does that look like? How they are looking to qualify into certain events, an open versus an invitational, et cetera, et cetera. And there's still a lot of uncertainty, maybe, right, Parker, on like what your schedule would potentially look like next year.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty. I mean, Pearson finished 5th or 6th on the points, and so the category we play out of is behind the 125. So, I mean, you're looking at one, really, give or take, 126 to 160. Because we have the 10 guys from Europe that will be put in front of the Corn Ferry status, and then the Corn Ferry graduates. And no one knows. Like, in the past, our agents kind of been able to tell what number on your priority. Okay, these events, like, you book them. You know you're 100% getting in that. But Sony this year is rookie orientation Sony, and right now no one can tell me if I'm going to be in Sony or not. I mean, Pearson will be, just on his number, but I finished 25th on the points. plus the 10 Europeans in front. So I'm 35th on the priority. And with everyone trying to make a push to get into those early elevated events, because if you play well early, you can really set up your season. Just no one really knows. And mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, like, good golf is good golf, and that takes care of a lot of things. Just need to, when I get the opportunity, make the most of it, and hopefully I'm teeing up in Sony.
Yeah. What is success look like, let's say, for next season? Have you guys thought about your goal setting for next season as a rookie? Success, Parker, I'll start with you. Next season looks like what?
I mean, first and foremost, retain full status, or gain full status, actually.
Gain full status, well, yep.
Mm-hmm. Actually, conditional currently, but that'd be first, and then go from there. Be in contention and go into winning and playing East Lake. I mean, that would be the goals for having your PGA Tour card, and mm-hmm. I think any PGA Tour player would tell you that, and I see no reason why I can't do that, and we'll be working this offseason to get in position to do so.
How about you, Pearson? Success looks like what next year?
Winning on the PGA Tour. I don't like to do all the small goals. There's one goal every year or every tournament, is to win. So I kind of just that's my one goal. That's my focus. And if I'm working to win every event, I'm going to be working really hard and doing the right things. And so a win on the PGA Tour is the goal.
All right, let's finish up with this. I can't let you guys go without just a little break. I'm on the Stripe Show, for crying out loud. So let's start here. Pearson, this is you, right?
Yep.
Actually, no, wait. We got to start with Parker, because Parker's the older one by 34 minutes. Yeah. Okay, so we got to go. Parker, you work with Troy Denton, right?
I do, yes.
And so you look at that swing. What comes to mind? Do you like looking at your swing, or do you like?
I look at it way too much, actually.
Okay.
I mean, first and foremost, starting, I'm a little taller and I'm a little too tall right now. I usually have a little more knee flex, and I'm a little close to it. As I mean, anyone could probably tell you, it just looks a little cramped to me. But positions are nice. I always check in my takeaway, just because I'll get inside and shut
right there.
Yeah, and so that's for me, that's a good position, as long as it's mm-hmm. just outside my hands. Face can be a little shut or a little close to my spine angle, but all in all, that's a good position for me. I take that every day, and then I like that position at the top. Mm-hmm. If anything, just fractionally laid off, but then it shallows in a nice spot, and
yeah,
I don't like having any face manipulation. I mean, I don't know many guys who do, but I don't like having any face manipulation. Like, that's one of the things Troy and I work on a lot, is getting in a position from where basically hip to hip, it's extremely quiet. It's just body matching and flat, or mm-hmm. I say flat, but not a lot of curve, just neutral balls that are synced up with your body, and from there, just let it go.
Yeah. It's funny, that first move, right there, you were saying, and getting that kind of organized correctly, right? You know, mm-hmm. getting it on plane and face in a good position. It sounds like, okay, if you're good there, then, well, it's probably gonna be pretty good up here.
Right. Yeah. I'm a big believer. If you have a solid takeaway, or if it's at least halfway decent, it's hard for a lot of stuff to go on at top. I mean, don't get me wrong, you manipulate in certain ways, but technically, if you set it in a nice position on your takeaway and your body just turns, like chest, stomach, all that stuff turns, I believe it should get in a halfway decent spot, or good enough spot to play some good golf at least.
So what's up with Troy? Like, is he kind of a quiet guy? Because, like, we've exchanged a couple texts, and I love his work. And I'm like, come on, man, you got to come on the pod. Like, every teacher comes on. I need you on the pod. Yeah, oh, yeah. He just seems like Troy seems like a pretty humble, quiet guy. And I'm like, dude, I need you on the pod to talk technique with me. Is that, what's he like?
No, that, I mean, truthfully, Pearson was laughing at that, because that is exactly how he is. Big personality when you're around him. I mean, he'll have love him to death. But, yeah, no, he wants nothing to do with the spotlight, or, I mean, anything. He loves teaching golf. He'll do anything for you, but he's pretty to himself, and he'll have his day at the golf course, and he'll go back to his family and just completely shut it down with them. And
There's nothing wrong with that. I got respect for that for sure. All right, now we got to go here. Your turn, Pearson. There you are. You work with Chris. A lot of similarities, really, when you look at the swing here. I mean, right there, halfway back, club face at the top looks the same. I mean, you might be a shade more upright, Pearson, right, but a lot of similarities for sure. What do you work on with Chris when you see this?
Yeah, in this swing particularly, I'm definitely, like Parker said, the takeaway. On the golf course, I have a habit of, club face getting a little insided, just inside my hands, and it just puts me in a position to – I am not a cross line. I'm very neutral at the top, but, it kind of might tend to work that way, get a little shut, and then the club shallows too hard, and I kind of just hit, a fine push draw. But – what Chris and I really are focusing on right now is keeping my hips quiet. I didn't get too much weight going to that back right heel, and it makes the transition just not very clean. So quiet hips, solid takeaway, and then kind of coming down, almost trying to feel like the club. And again, I wish my words were perfect. Chris might not agree with what I'm about to say, but I'm trying to feel like the club is staying between my elbow or between that gap in my arms. Mm-hmm. It's trying to stay in that gap longer and just not shallow below my forearm. So for a lot of guys, that's especially amateur golfers, that's probably not the correct feel that they need. But for me, I can get in a bad place of shallowing the club too hard, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. When I want to hit a draw, but in this video, I'm very much trying to keep it between my forearms and kind of just pinch, a 2 or 3 yard fade out there. I mean, pretty much everything will fade. But being kind of growing up a natural drawer of the golf ball, if I'm not doing the constant work to keep that slight fade, it can turn into a little draw. But yeah, I'm always trying to work that, that compression on all that kind of just through the golf ball.
It's good stuff. Well, you both got great swings. You've got a great team with, Josh Gregory, Chris Como, Troy Denton. Those are three of the best. Your dad and grandpa obviously did a great job, and your mom and the whole bit. So I'm a big fan and following your careers and wish you guys the best of luck next year on the PGA Tour. Appreciate your time for coming on.
Thanks for having us. Enjoyed it.
Good luck with those ladies too.